seen the sky so blue. The birds are singing, I got nothing to do. Hey, hey,
hey, hey.
It's a sunny day.
Sunny day now.
My pocket's empty, my cupboard's bare. But call me illogical, I just don't care. Hey, hey,
hey, hey.
It's just a sunny day.
Hey, 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 it's a sunny day.
It's the KSL Greenhouse. Expert tips for flowers, trees, gardens, and soil. Our hosts are Maria Chaleos and Ton Bettis on KSL News Radio.
Good morning. Thank you for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse and spending your Saturday morning with us, even though the weather is feeling a little apocalyptic right now. So the sky's so dark, Ton, because of all the dust that's in the air from those high winds. I don't know what kind of winds you saw in your area, but oh my goodness, it was tough to sleep last night.
Man, my garbage cans were blown over, mm-hmm. which this time of year happens every week, it seems like. But it's kind of weird side note. I came out of my house at about 6:10 and I scared like 7 cats out of the garbage can that had blown over.
Hey, they were taking cover.
Yeah, well, yeah, they were. I don't know what they were feasting on. So I put my garbage cans back up. They're going to have to start going in the garage again, it looks mm-hmm. like. But anyway, coming up, the sun had risen enough that Utah County was fairly clear. But when I hit Point of the Mountain, it just looked like a giant dust storm. And I drove through that all the way from Point of the Mountain to the studio.
And you need to be aware that this big dust storm, Kevin Eubank telling us, is pushing in a big cold front, which is expected to provide some pretty interesting snow. It's supposed to start around noonish, and then kind of between noon and 2, and then you can expect some significant snow on the roads, according to Kevin.
I don't know if this is going
You'll
to be...
You'll be home by then.
I will be home, but I don't know if this is going to become like the most hated term of the year. You know, every year you get that overused term, but I wonder if atmospheric river is going to be that this year, because I think that's what they're supposed to be hitting us again.
I think that is definitely going to be one of those. And it's just one of those like, well, no one's heard of an atmospheric river. And then suddenly it's dominating the news and we're talking about it. Yeah.
Yeah.
We're going to take your calls in just a moment, and the phone lines are open at 801-575-8255. You can also text us at 57500. Plant of the week is one that's going to be difficult to pronounce early this morning, but it is Fritillaria, and it is a bulb. And the reason we want to talk about this, spring is coming. We know that it is. And this is a spring blooming bulb. And this one, Ton, is very unusual, looks kind of tropical.
It is. And over the last 20 or 25 years, it has become more popular in other areas of the world. You know, there's a whole history of in Europe as explorers went out, the plant explorers were among the most foremost, and they would bring back all these exotic plants from all over the world to be grown by the wealthy in Europe. And so Fritillaria in Europe has been grown for centuries, and you know, it's native to the northern hemisphere, and so we even have a couple of native species in the Wasatch Mountains. They're not as showy as what we grow in our yards, but they've been known. But horticulturally in the United States, they've become more popular over the last 25 years.
Okay, so why did it take so long for them to take off?
It's just one of those things that one of them is like the main one called Crown Imperial, and those are really tall and the most showy. For 2 bulbs, you can pay $16.
Oh.
And so they can be a little more expensive for the ones that we're most familiar with, the Crown Imperial. And so, you know, if you buy 4 of these, that $32, it starts to add up. And so you don't plant very many of them. But since then, there are other species that have started becoming more available that are much more reasonable, and you'll pay the same price as you do for daffodil or tulip bulbs that are still very pretty.
Where do you find them?
Well, you're starting to see them more at garden centers, and even Walmart will have a few, Home Depots and things, and so local garden centers will have them, but you can order them online very easily. Langveld. I believe they just changed their name to Longfield, which Langveld's just Dutch for Longfield. But you can get them from Michigan Bulb Company, Dutch Bulb Company. You can order five or six different species online, and some of them look very different, almost like a cross between a hyacinth and a what's the Asian now, wisteria, you know. And so the how they look is that, especially with the crown imperial species, they grow up, there's a long stem that will get 2 feet tall, and then the flowers hang down from the stem, and it almost looks like a pineapple top with flowers hanging down on the stem. And I don't want to make it sound silly, but it's just this really distinctive look. And the others can look like that or have different kinds of looks, but their claim to fame or the trademark of this group, the Fritillaria, is that the flowers will hang down a little bit instead of being upright.
Okay. So do they come in multiple colors? Because I'm seeing a lot of reds there.
Yes, there's yellow, red, orange, purple, a fairly dark purple. The Persian Fritillaria is sometimes called Persian lily, has darker purples in it. There's actually checkered. The native species here have the checkered look, but so you'll get either white, and then you'll have kind of a mauve or a purple with white or yellow checkers in it. And so there's all sorts of variety, and they can be used, depending on the species, in more formal situations or a cottage garden look fairly easily.
When do they bloom?
They bloom at the same time as tulips do.
Okay, so you want to plant these behind your tulips so they don't cover them.
Yes,
up.
And in the, or else if they're shorter, they can go in. It just depends on the species.
Oh, there are different heights?
Yes, and so they'll be anywhere from a foot to 2.5 feet tall, depending on the species. And so, but they bloom right in the middle of the tulips, but they need to be planted in the fall. And so one thing I would suggest doing, if you want them, is to pre-order a few months in advance so you can get the best selection if you're ordering them online.
Do the native species do better than these others?
No, they'll do equally well.
So, yeah.
They're closely related. I mean, I've done a lot of reading on these. Just, you know, you need to know about them. And
you need to know more about them than the most of people.
The United States, especially California, has around 20 species of Fritillaria that are mostly through Oregon, Washington, California, but two of them come into Utah, and then there might be one that goes through the whole country. But our species, scientists suspect that they were introduced from Asia when we had the land bridge and the ice ages, the last couple of ice ages. And so all of our species are very closely related and almost exclusive. The little subgroup that we have are exclusive to North America, besides one or two species. And so they are native here. There's some beautiful ones in California and Oregon that I'm not sure are hardy here. No one's tried, but we do have these. And if you're out hiking in the spring, especially in our foothills, you'll run into these. They bloom about the same time as our calocordis, the lilies.
Calocordis?
I'm trying to remember. It's okay. The lilies that supposedly the pioneers ate, but they didn't really.
But they didn't really eat
No.
them. Okay. So what makes these unusual for me is most of the time when you plant a bulb, it's a single stem with one flower.
Yes.
This is a single stem with multiple flowers that kind of hang down instead of sitting upright.
They do. And they are still very beautiful to do that, but with a different species, you can get totally different looks from very formal to something that would look not like a hyacinth, but that would be a little bit taller than a hyacinth with that central stem with all the flowers, but the flowers, instead of going out sideways, hang down just a little bit.
And this, like we mentioned last week when we talked about bulbs, they're water-wise.
They
are
very
water-wise. So if you're looking for that kind of spring color in your flower gardens in the beds there, this is a great way to go. You don't have to provide them any water.
You don't. They will survive on rainwater. You know, if we're extremely dry, you know, several years ago we had a spring to where we were in the 70s in early April and stayed. And you may need to supplement water them once or twice. But they survive on snow and just natural soil moisture and go dormant. And because they require no water, if you have areas that you're trying to maintain, say a prairie, and that attracts a lot of beneficials in, these are great for that because they will come up and then die back and they will transition into the prairie area, transitions into other things. But even flower beds, they work really well.
Yeah, it's a good thing to think about because oftentimes people think, oh, water-wise, that means just green or something not
even
as colorful.
When you get to the extremes, they think, oh, Nevada desert with you know, cow skull and cacti and things. And no,
there are other options.
There are many other options.
Okay. Our phone lines are open. 801-575-8255. Again, the plant of the week, the Fritillaria. You can find more on the KSL Greenhouse Facebook page. We'll come back with your text too at 57500. Thank you for spending your Saturday morning with the KSL Greenhouse. Maria Anton with you. And the plant of the week that we were talking about, the Fritillaria, which you can find out more on the KSL Greenhouse Facebook page. But we always turn off the microphones, Ton, and then you tell me some of the most fascinating information. You were saying that bulbs back in the day, and I'm going to let you do the history on this, so, people were actually put to death for stealing them?
Yes. In the 15th, 16th centuries, there, as Europe became, I guess, quote unquote, re-enlightened. One of the things that happened is that explorers went out specifically to find plants to bring back. And the countries, kings, and rulers wanted exclusivity on these plants. And so if an explorer came in, they could actually put a plant up almost for bid or auction. And they would guarantee that they were the only ones that had it, you know, to the best of their knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's actually records of gardeners for the royalty and the wealthy stealing bulbs and starts of plants and then secretly selling them to the king's rivals or their wealthy's rivals so that they can get that same plant in their garden and being put to death over it.
Wow.
It was that serious. And
don't touch our plants.
We want special things
in our yard.
In
don't touch
Europe, there was a bulb craze during that period of time, especially with tulips. But as explorers went into the Middle East, and a lot of our bulbs that we use are native to North Africa, the Middle East, Eastern Europe, that they didn't really have access to. And then they started breeding these to get them bigger and prettier and last longer, whatever they needed to do. And so you could actually pay for something brand new that, again, you had exclusivity to, a king's ransom for this, and nobody else would have it. And it was just, you had bragging rights to having this. And so there's a whole history out there during that period of time of these plant explorers being some of the most intrepid people out there, going to places like Korea and China and the Middle East and bringing these plants back. And a lot of them are now what we commonly use in our yards.
One of our listeners wants to know, do Fritillaria stink?
They can. The Crown Imperial is the main one. And so if you use them, the smell isn't so bad that your yard's going to smell. But if you're within a few feet of them, they may. And so it's one of those things that if you use them, I wouldn't put them in my patio planters and then park my lawn chair next to them. But they're something that aren't so strong that they're going to ruin the day.
Yeah, but you're going to want to make sure you know where you plant them, not next to the patio.
Correct.
We have a listener who says who planted them in the past and loves how they look, but smell kind of skunkish.
And if you plant a lot of them, that could happen. Maybe plant them closer to the neighbor's yard that you've had disagreements with.
That is
and
so
make
mean,
sure that the prevailing wind wafts toward their house. And so not all of them do. It's mainly the Crown Imperial species. But do your research, because these are that smell. There are many flowers, you know, daffodils and paper whites, flowering pears.
They do not smell well.
Hawthorns. Mm-hmm. But the reason they exude that particular smell is that they're attracting certain pollinators. And it's almost like, not that they're the scumbag pollinators, but it's like the flies and things of that nature. The smell attracts things that would be feeding on, you know, the decomposing plant or animal matter, but those are the what they're trying to attract to pollinate them.
I love it. Okay, next listener wants to know about pruning a Schumard oak. We talked about last week's special pruning for lopsided trees, and they have a lopsided tree, and they want to know how they can fix their oak.
Without seeing pictures, and they could text some pictures over, or not really text, but put some pictures on Facebook Messenger, you want to follow the offending branch back to a major branch intersection to where the tree would be rounded again, and then just cut it at that point. Okay. So you would cut it at a major branch intersection.
All right. Jack is on the line in North Ogden. Good morning, Jack. What was your question?
I have apples, peach, and pear trees, and I'm wondering when I can start pruning them.
The apples and pears I would get on this morning if you can, because they were supposed to be pruned a couple of weeks ago. The peaches and other stone fruits mid-March.
Okay. Thank you.
All right, Jack, thanks for your call this morning. Next listener, Ton, says they received their Bare Root Golden Delicious apple tree in the mail 3 days ago. Can they plant it now? And if not, how do they keep it healthy?
Well, if it's completely dormant, they can try. I wish it wouldn't have been shipped quite yet, because we usually plant those in sometime late April. Mm-hmm. But if they've got it, all that they can really do is, one, they can try to store it as is, and they would go in and open up the plastic wrap and re-wet the soil, and they would need to keep it cold. And so I'd put it on the north side of my house, maybe under some, they can put soil over the box or bark mulch, and just cover it up to see if they can keep it dormant for another at least month. But the other option would be to put it in a pot. Now, it's going to be hard to find a natural fiber pot big enough to accommodate the root system, but they could put it in a natural fiber pot. They might be able to pick one up from a local garden center for $5-$10 and then plant it in potting soil in the natural fiber pot. And again, put it on the north side of their house, secure it so it doesn't blow over. And when they're, you know, they could even put it in an unheated shed, but when they're ready to plant it, they would just plant the whole fiber pot in the ground, and they would slit the edges and just let it root out that way. But unfortunately, it showed up a bit early.
A little early. Okay. Julie is on the line in Lehigh. Good morning, Julie. What was your question this morning?
I have butterfly bushes that are huge and rose bushes kind of right in the same area. I'm wondering if I should prune them now, or was I supposed to prune them already?
No, mid-March is the time to do that.
Oh, great.
So just trim the butterfly bushes. Depending on their size, you can easily take them down to a quarter of the size they already are, or maybe even lower. And they'll just, they'll be angry with you, but they'll grow back and they'll bloom like mad through the summer. And you'll probably have more flowers, but you do that every spring. The roses, if they're the hybrid tea roses that we use for flower displays, cut them back to three or four, maybe five main canes if they're older, and just somewhere around knee to thigh height, depending on their age.
Okay. Yeah, they're about 4 years, between 3 and 4 years old.
So probably knee height is fine.
Okay. Okay. Thank you so much.
Julie, thanks so much for your call this morning. Number to call with your questions, 801-575-8255. We'll be back following the news. You can also text us at 57500.
The Greenhouse Show on KSL News Radio.
Good morning, and thank you for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse. Maria Chaleos, Ton Bettis, taking your calls, 801-575-8255. Phone lines are open, and you can text us your questions at 57500. Next listener is in South Jordan, Ton, and they want to know, when is the primo time to plant peas and beets?
My station's rearranged. I'm trying a new setup today, and so I had lost
the
microphone button.
You got it.
Yes, it's on the opposite side today. So, as far as peas, mid-March to early April is the ideal time. And I've told this story before, but I remember doing, when I first started with Extension, we sent out a press release on early season gardening. And the earliest along the Wasatch Front you can put things out without protection is usually mid-March, but a lot depends on the weather. And the day the story aired, we got a foot of snow, and people were commenting, who is this idiot?
Right.
And so...
Because they're so nice when they're anonymous. Yeah.
You need to... It was before KSL patrolled the comments, but you need to use your head. And if you see a big snowstorm coming in on March 18th, you need to wait. And so if you look at the 10-day forecast and the weather is moderate, then you can plant. Now, the peas won't germinate until the soil's warm enough and they're ready. But just use your head about when to put them in. Now, the beets are not that early. Usually sometime in mid-March or mid-April is when you would put your beets in.
On those peas, the birds like to eat them.
So they do.
You're going to want to use some netting around it.
Netting, or the other thing you can do, if you plant them in straight lines, you can take 2x4s and put them over the top of them, because you know they're not going to germinate for 5 to 10 days. And after about 5 or 6 days, go out and just overturn the 2x4. And if you see one or two popping through the soil, take it off.
Okay, good idea. Hadn't heard that one. Next listener has a 10-year-old peach tree, has a huge branch that hangs over their lawn and makes it difficult to mow. They're wondering if they take it off, is it going to hurt the tree since it's such a huge branch? And then would they use a chainsaw? Would the chainsaw harm the tree?
So they've got the situation?
A big, huge branch, peach on their peach tree.
A peach tree.
But it's hanging where they mow. So it's kind of dangerous for them, hard to mow. And they're wondering what's going to happen if they try to take that branch out.
Well, I mean, the purist in me would tell them to take out the lawn under the peach tree.
Stop.
So that would solve the problem. It would be healthier for the peach tree.
Well, it would solve one problem, but if they have children who need to play under the peach tree, it doesn't solve the problem.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's the option, is to prune it back. And you can take up to 50% of the wood off of a peach tree in a given year. It's the only tree, that nectarines, that you would do that to. But I would just get it done. The tree will be a little angry and... It's not ideal, but what do you do?
Is this a good time to do it?
Mid-March.
Okay. Isn't it going to just leave a big mark on that poor tree?
It will.
Where do they cut it to make sure it's not too bad?
They need to watch some pruning videos on pruning larger branches, but the process would be is they would go out, and the first cut they would make is actually on the underside of the branch near the trunk, and they just cut about a third of the way up. And so why you do that is if the branch snaps, if you make that cut, it won't rip the bark off the trunk. So that's the first cut you make. The second cut is going to be somewhere out toward the middle of the branch, and then you take that off because that relieves the weight. Mm-hmm. And then you make a third cut where you started with your first one and just cut the limb off there.
That makes a lot of sense. Okay, another thing I've been doing wrong for how many years? Okay. and the chainsaw doesn't make any difference. That's not good.
No, it doesn't.
Okay, next listener would like to know what trees are safe to plant next to their house. They need shade on their house because their husband's office gets too hot in the summer. So what can they plant next to the house?
I wish we had more information, because you don't want to put anything too close. Because, one, it can create a fire hazard if, for some reason, the trees catch on fire, or the branches may be able to fall over on the roof. And so, just without more information, what I would recommend are some of the crab apples planted far enough away that they'll, as they mature, they will shade but not be too much over the house. Or some of the more narrow trees planted at an appropriate distance, something like kindred spirit oak, columnar oak. For columnar trees, the oaks are the longest lived. There's also columnar Norway maples that they could try. So there's a few of them out there, but I would really like more information before I just say, oh, do this tree.
Right. Next listener wants to know, does Rose of Sharon, Little Kim come in different colors?
Well, Little Kim is only white, but there are other dwarf Rose of Sharon out there that are different colors. And so I can't remember all of their names, but there are a few companies out there that have purchased the rights to them. They were bred in Korea originally, but the Lil' Kim is the most common. I actually have some in my yard. They're 5 years old, and they've reached about 3 feet tall, is it? Mm-hmm. But Proven Winners has Columnar Rose of Sharon, Dwarf Rose of Sharon, but there's others out there that you can look up online, and they're becoming much more available at local garden centers.
Next listener wants to know, are there some things that they can do this year to help their tulips and daffodils for next year?
If they are lacking for some reason.
My bulbs are ignored.
Yeah.
I do nothing with them.
You know, you can try fertilizing
them. I see the bulb food and I go, why?
Yeah, they do fine, but it just depends on the situation. Normally, they actually grow in soil that's fairly low in nitrogen and they're perfectly happy. If you over-fertilize them, it actually may cause them to not flower. And so one thing I would do is if you do fertilize them is just as they're starting to bloom, one light application, like a half application of lawn fertilizer would do them. And you might only need to do that every 3 or 4 years.
And Miracle-Gro or something like that.
That's fine.
Would be fine. Okay. Next listener wants to know, let's see, is it best to let sweet meat squash grow on the ground or to stake it up?
It doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter. If they want to stake it, they can, either way.
Next person says, can they cut the old stalks on bee balm now since it's getting ready for new growth at the base?
They certainly can.
Next person wants to know, there are a lot of texts I have to kind of weed through here. They're wondering if you can divide Carl Forrester grass and when the best time to do that is.
Now. If you can dig, I would split it now. I've noticed that with this warmer weather, a lot of the grasses are already popping up for the spring. And so I would just cut it back to 6 inches and I would sharpen the shovel you're using with a file or just a grinder and just go out and split it so you can dig a trench around the grass. And then once you get a trench, you just take that shovel or you can use a Sawzall. You'll want to throw the blade away after you're done, but you split that into 3 or 4 chunks with the roots on, and then you can just replant those.
Okay, they're also wondering about the basket of gold perennial. Wouldn't you want to wait till after that blooms?
Yeah, I would divide it in the fall.
Okay, that one's a little bit different. Cliff in Magna has a 30-year-old lawn, but he says it's in pretty good shape, but he does want to reseed this year. When would be a good time and a good temperature to do that?
He can spread seed over the lawn at any time and it'll just come up with the weather. This morning, if he can get out there before the storm,
won't blow away.
You just kind of have to stand back 50 feet and let the seed blow in the wind. But if it wasn't too windy this morning, it would be a great time. But after the storm would be fine too.
Okay. Next listener says 2 years ago, they planted a Jasper tomato. The plant came back last year. Can this plant actually reseed itself?
They can. Tomatoes will reseed. And
some tomatoes reseed.
Yeah. It's the heirloom types and the open pollinator more likely, but even the hybrid will reseed. But a lot of times, if you let your hybrid tomatoes reseed, what comes back will be far worse than the parent plant.
Okay. So not the greatest thought.
No, but if they're open pollinated, say, you know, you were growing the yellow pear or black creme or, you know, even the Amish paste or whatever, these tomatoes, because the seed almost comes back 100% true to type, oftentimes your tomatoes will be later and you may have a reduced crop, but you can absolutely use those that have come back from seed.
Okay. We're going to take a break, come back with more of your calls and questions. Phone lines are open at 801-575-8255. You can text us 57500. Good morning. Thank you for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse. Maria and Ton with you this morning, taking your calls and your questions. Phone lines are open right now at 801-575-8255. Also, you can text us at 57500. Next listener would like to know, Ton, is there a chart somewhere that lists when to fertilize flowers, vegetables, and trees?
Not really.
Because they don't always need fertilizer.
No. The fertilizer is something that people view that they have to do to keep their plants healthy. Well, in the wild, the only fertilizer a plant gets, it comes from decomposing organic matter, which is usually less than 1% nitrogen, and lightning. Lightning actually can convert atmospheric nitrogen into usable soil nitrogen, and that's going to be pretty rare.
Mm-hmm.
So the plant survived just fine without the fertilizer and were healthy. And so the reason we're using fertilizer and we're using it strategically is to, one, increase growth. We want it to grow faster. And so we put what are called luxury amounts of nutrients in the soil. If the soil is nutrient deficient, we can supplement the soil. That would be another reason so that the plants can be healthy. And then in situations, especially on commercial orchards, they push the trees scientifically, but they push them with fertilizer to get the trees up to size more quickly and to boost their yields. But they do it in a way that the trees are not harmed by too much fertilizer, knowing when to apply and how much. But as a hobby grower or just a homeowner, we don't need to be doing these things.
If the plant looks fine,
yeah,
you don't need to be fertilizing.
And so there is, USU has some fact sheets on peaches and apples, especially the fruit trees. And in apples, if it's a newer apple, if you're getting around a foot to 16 inches of growth a year, on an average apple, that's considered sufficient. Don't fertilize. On a stone fruit, if you're getting around 18 inches of growth, especially after you've pruned, that is considered sufficient. Don't fertilize. And so if you're not getting that, you need to investigate, why isn't my tree growing fast enough? Why isn't that perennial doing well? And then you could do some soil testing to see if that was a situation. But fertilizer isn't a miracle product that prevents diseases nor cures diseases if the plant is unhealthy. It's almost like just like us taking vitamins to make sure that we have our recommended dose.
It's almost a waste of money.
It is.
That's why you call it a luxury.
It is. And so you can actually have, especially nitrogen, luxury amounts of nitrogen, and the plants will store it for up to a month to use later, almost like a bank.
So aren't you better off then doing something like compost or mulch to improve your soil? And then
you always are, you know, to just mimic their native environment and make it a little bit better, and that will help. And so, you know, we talked about earlier the person that had the peach tree in their lawn, and we don't have a choice sometimes, and we have to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Smaller yards, and we're trying to multi-purpose where kids are playing. But in an ideal situation, the fruit trees are grown in bare soil, maybe covered by a couple of inches of mulch. And you can actually double their growth rate in bare soil as compared to growing them in the lawn, because they have the available nutrients when they're not competing with the grass. And so if you're growing your fruit trees in your lawn, that may be a situation that you go out in mid-March with 16 or 20-00 and put anywhere from the size of a tree, from a half cup to a measuring cup, or a couple of cups, if it's an old tree, under the canopy, so that there's extra nutrients for that tree to grow. But it's something that you need to consider, and it's not gospel that you have to do it or else your plants are going to die or be unhealthy.
All right. Next listener wants to know, is it too late to cut a smoke bush back a lot, like 2 to 3 feet?
No. Wait till mid-March and have at it.
All right. James is on the line in West Valley City. Good morning, James. What was your question?
Yeah, I called in a while back, a few weeks ago, a month ago, about the beetle down in Monticello. I was using some stuff, Zy something. It didn't work. But anyhow, I went to Steve Reagan, and I'm looking at, it's called Valent Safari 20 SG. They said that would kill the beetle. They're not sure. I don't know. I can't spray 40 feet.
What's the beetle in, first off?
What's that?
What is the beetle attacking?
It's attacking the pinion.
Okay.
And maybe even the cedars a little bit, because okay, I've lost a couple cedar trees too.
There are different engraver beetles, but what you would need to know is the species, because that the safari is systemic and it will go after a number of beetles, but if they're engraver beetles, it may not. And so what I would actually do for those pinions is, especially the ones surrounding your property, if you could deep water them once a month with some soaker hose under the canopy, they would love you. And that just that little supplemental water would give them some extra oomph to be able to fight those beetles off. Some other things you could do is actually use a cover spray, something along the lines of 7 or permethrin, and you would spray that in early spring on the first week that we're regularly in the 50s. And you would have to spray the trunk and limbs. But the systemic may not work, depending on what beetle it is.
Yeah, it's a little gray beetle. I caught one of them when I was cutting down a dead tree that it killed last year, and I tried to get a picture of it. I should have put it out differently. But I asked them the question, so you don't think this will work?
I don't know without knowing the exact species, just because it's so species-specific. If you can get another beetle, take a sample and mail it to the USU Pest Lab. And for like $10 or $15, they'll look at it. And if they know it's on pinion, I'll bet you they can identify it very quickly for you so you could get a more formalized treatment plan.
I called the Forest Service down there and I asked them, but you guys know what will kill it? But I never got a call back from them. But my other question with this stuff is, and then she didn't know, and I said, what about pinnabark? Because pinnabark, I added it with the other stuff. Pinnabark is supposed to pull the poison up into the tree.
Well,
does that work with it?
Pentabark it's called a silicone surfactant, and it doesn't pull it into the tree, but it allows the poison to more thoroughly penetrate into the tree because it has broken down a protective layer that the tree would use to normally keep that kind of stuff out. And so it's called a penetrant, and it's just something that if you use Safari with pentabark, it'll go after a number of things. But I would really try to catch one of those beetles, send it up to USU for a positive identification. And once you know what it is, we can come up with a treatment plan.
All right. So, I mean, they actually told me, Lori, she has a landscaping business. She said there was a plug that you can drill into the hole and push this plug in, but they said that wouldn't work.
Again, you're going back to systemics, and if that beetle isn't feeding in the right part of the conductive tissue, it won't help.
Okay.
That's why you really need to know what it is.
Okay. Yeah, all I can tell you, it was gray, and because I cut the tree down, I thought I sprayed it, going to kill the beetle off, but it killed the tree, so I cut it down. It was huge.
If you have the water, supplement water those pines if we're dry in the summer.
Can't. That problem is the 30 acres, and I have to haul water into it.
Okay.
So I've heard that same thing. I've actually taken water and soaked my trees down. If I have dirty water from washing my hands, I always throw it on the tree instead of throwing it on the ground. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Trying to give them every drop I can give them. But yeah, drought years is tough, and I understand that part of it. My other question, do we have the black
beet? We're up near a break really fast. We've got
one minute, just letting you know. So what was your other question quickly?
Do we have the black bee in Utah?
I have no idea.
It's one of the best? Okay. I watched a show the other day, and he said it's one of the best for pollen, more than the honeybee.
Without knowing a genus and species, it's really hard to say.
Oh, okay. All righty. I appreciate your time.
James, thanks so much for your call this morning. Next listener, Ton, wants to know when they can. This is Pam. She's just tuning in. Wants to know when she can prune her roses.
Mid-March.
And let's see. Okay. When we come back, I was going to go to the next question, which has nothing to do with the greenhouse. So I'm like, not going to touch it. When we come back after the top of the hour news, we're going to talk about starting seeds indoors. And if you stick with us through the 10 o'clock hour, the top of the hour feature in the 10 o'clock hour is on preparing your soil for the gardening season. At the 8 o'clock hour, our top of the hour feature was the plant of the week, which is Fritillaria. You can find out more about that on the KSL Greenhouse Facebook page. And always know that you can catch us in podcast form here on KSL. What are you going to be doing in your yard today, Don? Nothing?
Absolutely nothing. Absolutely nothing. I think I'm going to be putting up ceiling fans.
Oh, boy.
My wife ordered enough of them for the kids' bedrooms.
And this is why we are itching for spring, isn't it? Because we want to be outside. Our phone lines are open. When we come back, you can call us at 801-575-8255. You can also text us at 57500.